The fairy tale lady. The fairy tale lady. The fairy tale lady podcast. Hello, and welcome to this week's podcast of the fairy tale lady. This week, we're going to be hearing the second part from the story The Enchanted Horse from the book Arabian Nights by Andrew Lang. Last week, we left with Prince Firas Jaha declaring his love for the Princess of Bengal. And here's the second part of the story. The air with which he said these words could have left no doubt on the mind of the princess as to the effect of her charms. And the blush which mounted to her face only increased her beauty. "Prince," she replied, as soon as her confusion permitted her to speak, "you have given me the greatest pleasure, and I have followed you closely in all your adventures. And though you are positively sitting before me, I even trembled at your danger in the upper regions of the air. Let me say what a debt I owe to the chance that has led you to my house. You could have entered none which would have given you a warmer welcome. As to your being a slave, of course that is merely a joke, and my reception must itself have assured you that you are free here as you are at your father's court. As to your heart," continued, she said in tones of encouragement, "I am quite sure that must have been disposed of long ago to some princess who is well worthy of it, and I could not think of being the cause of your unfaithfulness to her." Prince Firas Jaha was about to protest that there was no lady with any prior claims, but he was stopped by the entrance of one of the princess's attendants, who announced that dinner was served, and, after all, neither was sorry for the interruption. Dinner was laid in a magnificent apartment, and the table was covered with delicious fruits, while during the repast, richly dressed girls sang softly and sweetly to the stringed instruments. After the prince and princess had finished, they passed into a small room, hung with blue and gold, looking out into a garden stocked with flowers and arbutus trees, quite different from any that were to be found in Persia. "Princess," observed the young man, "till now, I had always believed that Persia could boast finer palaces and more lovely gardens than any kingdom upon the earth. But my eyes have been opened, and I begin to perceive that, wherever there is a great king, he will surround himself with buildings worthy of him." "Prince," replied the Princess of Bengal, "I have no idea what a Persian palace is like, so I am unable to make comparisons. I do not wish to deprecate my own palace, but I can assure you that it is very poor beside that of the king of my father, as you will agree when you have been there to greet him, as I hope you will shortly do." Now the princess hoped that, by bringing about a meeting between the prince and her father, the king would be so struck with the young man's distinguished air and fine manners that he would offer him to his daughter to wife. But the reply of the prince of Persia to her suggestion was not quite what she wished. "Madame," he said, "by taking advantage of your proposal to visit the palace of the King of Bengal, I should satisfy not merely my curiosity, but also the sentiments of respect with which I regard him. But, Princess, I am persuaded that you will feel with me that I cannot possibly present myself before so great a sovereign without the attendants suitable to my rank. You would think me an adventurer." "If that is all," she answered, "you can get as many attendants here as you please. There are plenty of Persian merchants, and as for money, my treasury is always open to you. Take what you please." Prince Firas Jaha guessed what prompted so much kindness on the part of the princess, and was much touched by it. Still, his passion, which increased every moment, did not make him forget his duty, so he replied without hesitation, "I do not know, Princess, how to express my gratitude for your obliging offer, which I would accept at once if it were not for the recollection of all the uneasiness the king my father must be suffering on my account. I should be unworthy indeed of all the love he showers upon me if I did not return to him at the first possible moment. For while I am enjoying the society of the most amiable of all princesses, he is, I am quite convinced, plunged in the deepest grief, having lost all hope of seeing me again. I am sure you will understand my position, and will feel that to remain away one instant longer than is necessary would not only be ungrateful on my part, but perhaps even a crime, for how do I know if my absence may not break his heart? But, continued the prince, having obeyed the voice of my conscience, I shall count the moments when, with your gracious permission, I may present myself before the King of Bengal, not as a wanderer, but as a prince, to implore the favor of your hand. My father has always informed me that in my marriage I shall be left quite free, but I am persuaded that I have only to describe your generosity for my wishes to become his own. The Princess of Bengal was too reasonable not to accept the explanation offered by Prince Firas Shah, but she was much disturbed at his intention of departing at once, for she feared that, no sooner had he left her, than the impression she had made upon him would fade away. So she made one more effort to keep him, and after assuring him that she entirely approved of his anxiety to see his father, begged him to give her a day or two more of his company. In common politeness, the prince could hardly refuse this request, and the princess set about inventing every kind of amusement for him, and succeeded so well that 2 months slipped by almost unnoticed, in balls, spectacles, and in hunting, of which, when unattended by danger, the princess was passionately fond. But at last, one day he declared seriously that he could not neglect his duty no longer, and entreated her to put no further obstacles in his way, promising, at the same time, to return, as soon as he could, with all the magnificence due both to her and to himself. "Princess," he added, "it may be that in your heart you class me with those false lovers whose devotion cannot stand the test of absence. If you do, you wrong me. And were it not for fear of offending you, I would beseech you to come with me, for my life can only be happy when passed with you. As for your reception at the Persian court, it will be as warm as your merits deserve. And as for what concerns the King of Bengal, he must be much more indifferent to your welfare than you have led me to believe, if he does not give his consent to our marriage." The princess could not find words in which to reply to the arguments of the Prince of Persia, but her silence and her downcast eyes spoke for her, and declared that she had no objection to accompanying him on his travels. The only difficulty that occurred to her was that Prince Firas Shah did not know how to manage the horse, and she dreaded lest they might find themselves in the same plight as before. But the prince soothed her fears so successfully that she soon had no other thought than to arrange for their flight so secretly that no one in the palace should suspect it. This was done, and early the following morning, when the whole palace was wrapped in sleep, she stole up onto the roof, where the prince was already awaiting her, with his horse's head towards Persia. He mounted first, and helped the princess up behind. Then, when she was firmly seated, with her hands holding tightly to his belt, he touched the screw, and the horse began to leave the earth quickly behind him. He traveled with his accustomed speed, as Prince Firas Shah guided him so well that in 2 hours and a half from the time of starting, he saw the capital of Persia lying beneath him. He determined to alight neither in the great square from which he had started, nor in the Sultan's palace, but in a country house at a little distance from the town. Here he showed the princess a beautiful suite of rooms and begged her to rest, while he informed his father of their arrival and prepared a public reception worthy of her rank. Then he ordered a horse to be saddled and set out. All the way through the streets, he was welcomed with shouts of joy by the people, who had long lost all hope of seeing him again. On reaching the palace, he found the Sultan surrounded by his ministers, all clad in the deepest mourning, and his father almost went out of his mind with surprise and delight at the mere sound of his son's voice. When he had calmed down a little, he begged the prince to relate his adventures. The prince at once seized the opening thus given him, and told the whole story of his treatment by the Princess of Bengal, not even concealing the fact that she had fallen in love with him. "And sire," ended the prince, "having given my royal word that you would not refuse your consent to our marriage, I persuaded her to return with me on the Indian's horse. I have left her in one of your highness's country houses, where she is waiting anxiously to be assured that I have not promised in vain." As he said this, the prince was about to throw himself at the feet of the sultan, but his father prevented him, and embracing him again, said eagerly, "My son, not only do I gladly consent to your marriage with the Princess of Bengal, but I will hasten to pay my respects to her, and to thank her in my own person for the benefits she has conferred on you. I will then bring her back with me, and make all arrangements for the wedding to be celebrated today." So the sultan gave orders that the habits of mourning worn by the people should be thrown off, and that there should be a concert of drums, trumpets, and cymbals. Also, that the Indian should be taken from prison and brought before him. His commands were obeyed, and the Indian was led into his presence, surrounded by guards. "I have kept you locked up," said the sultan, "so that in case my son was lost, your lives should pay the penalty. He has now returned, so take your horse and be gone forever." The Indian hastily quitted the presence of the sultan, and when he was outside, he inquired of the man who had taken him out of prison where the prince had really been all this time, and what he had been doing. They told him the whole story, and how the Princess of Bengal was even then awaiting in the country palace the consent of the sultan, which at once put into the Indian's head a plan of revenge for the treatment he had experienced. Going straight to the country house, he informed the doorkeeper, who was left in charge, that he had been sent by the sultan and by the prince of Persia to fetch the princess on the enchanted horse and to bring her to the palace. The doorkeeper knew the Indian by sight, and was of course aware that nearly 3 months before he had been thrown into prison by the sultan, and seeing him at liberty, the man took for granted that he was speaking the truth, and made no difficulty about leading him before the Princess of Bengal, while, on her side, hearing that he had come from the prince, the lady gladly consented to do what he wished. The Indian, delighted with the success of his scheme, mounted the horse, assisted by the princess to mount behind him, and turned the peg at the very moment that the prince was leaving the palace in the Shiraz for the country house, followed closely by the sultan and all the court. Knowing this, the Indian deliberately steered the horse right above the city in order that his revenge for his unjust imprisonment might be all the quicker and sweeter. When the sultan of Persia saw the horse and its riders, he stopped short with astonishment and horror, and broke out into oaths and curses, which the Indian heard quite unmoved, knowing that he was perfectly safe from his pursuit. But mortified and furious as the sultan was, his feelings were nothing to those of Prince Firas Jaha when he saw the object of his passionate devotion being borne rapidly away. And while he was struck speechless with grief and remorse at not having guarded her better, she vanished swiftly out of his sight. What was he to do? Should he follow his father into the palace and there give reins to his despair? Both his love and his courage alike forbade it, and he continued his way to the palace. The sight of the prince showed the doorkeeper of what folly he had been guilty, and flinging himself at his master's feet, implored his pardon. "Rise," said the prince. "I am the cause of this misfortune, and not you. Go and find me the dress of a dervish, but beware of saying it is for me." It was easy enough to get hold of a dervish's dress, which the prince at once put on, instead of his own, disguised like this, and concealed about him a box of pearls and diamonds he had intended as a present to the princess. He left the house at nightfall, uncertain where he should go, but firmly resolved not to return without her. Meanwhile, the Indian had turned the horse in such direction that before many hours passed, it had entered a wood close to the capital of the kingdom of Kashmir. Feeling very hungry, and supposing that the princess also might be in want of food, He brought his steed down to the earth and left the princess in a shady place on the banks of a clear stream.